I think I might have undiagnosed depression.
Welcome to another exciting episode of the Weeb Crew Podcast. I'm your host, Moomy. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Psyotic.
Yeah, I want to be real with you, Chief. I'm kind of checked out right now.
I'm trying to raise the energy for everybody.
You're trying to put out positive, good vibes. I'm not having it today.
Good vibrations.
I got off work. I took a fucking nap from like 5:30 to like now, basically.
To now.
So, and I'm just like, you know when you take that after work nap and you wake up and you're still tired and you're like, yeah, you know what? God doesn't exist.
Oh my God.
You know, life is pointless. I think, you know, it wouldn't, you know what? There's like a meteor that's like supposed to hit Earth in like 2032. It's like, yeah, let it come.
Well, let's get this shit over with. I just
want to sleep forever. I don't want to get out of bed. There's no point. I think I might have undiagnosed depression.
I mean, wanting to sleep all the time is a symptom of depression. That is correct.
It may also just be I have a fucking undiagnosed like sleep apnea or something.
That is also a symptom of sleep apnea.
What's the thing like where you go to like you go to like a sleep study thing? But I feel like if I did something like that, I just wouldn't be able to sleep anyway.
Well, I think they make you come back multiple nights if you can't.
Do they? Okay. I don't.
I mean, it might charge you because you're using their.
Or like, just like not. Like, don't they like hook wires up to your brain or something as well? I can sleep with that.
I don't know. Do they?
Or is it literally just you're in a room and they watch you sleep?
They might like check your heart rate. I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know, to be honest with you. I've never done one, so I can't. Have you done a sleep study? Comment below how that works. Did they shove the needle diodes in your brain?
Use magnets? Is it anything like fucking out something out of Jacob's Ladder or something? And it's like, no, you just need to try and sleep.
It's just fucking a Clockwork Orange, except they shut your eyes and open them.
I'm a sleepy boy today, Moomy. You're gonna need to like lead the charge. So what are we doing tonight?
No, I'm not the energetic one.
No, it's what the Japanese would say, Genki. Okay,
not the Genki.
I'm the podcast Genki girl. You're like the I don't Kudere. I don't know what the fuck.
The Kudere. I don't know if anyone would describe me as the Kudere.
I don't know. I was reading my blog earlier. I think if you put like Kudere in your like in your Grindr bio, it would probably do numbers.
God damn it. Well, I figured today, you know, in celebration of being called a tourist on Twitter for over the weekend.
Did we? What happened?
I don't know. We posted like an image or something, and
I posted like a chart, and that got like 5 million views or something.
I think it was 4 million, but who's counting? You know.
Who's counting? Well, I think across both, like, because I posted like a second one where I just flipped both sides, and you know how like they conduct IQ tests through like pattern recognition.
Yeah,
we're not. We're not making it, guys. I'm sorry. If people can't pick up on the fact that I mean, some people did, but a lot of people did not pick up on the fact that I just, like, took the image in Photoshop and just moved one side to the other.
I thought 100 IQ was average.
I mean, it is, but, like, they adjust it over time, so it's always average. Oh. In reality, it's, like, 100 now is, like, what 60 was, like, 15 years ago. It's plummeted. Stocks
are falling.
That
explains why IQ is skyrocketing.
Guys, sell your IQ stocks off now, all right?
We all know IQ is very, very important, very valuable.
Listen, take your money out of IQ, invest in our new Weeb Crew coin.
The Weeb Crew coin.
Weeb coin.
be a sense to celebrate being called a tourist, I thought it'd be interesting to talk about some obscure anime.
To flex our power level.
You just flex on the hose.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm here for. There was like one guy that I was like talking to, and he was like, "Prove you're not a tourist," and name like four important like anime or manga or whatever. And I don't like you know that aren't like Naruto, Bleach, like big three normie stuff. So I did, and he was like, "Why didn't you list Fist of the North Stars?" Because I don't know. You wanted four. There's four.
You listed like Gensenzo Sama, Bonbonzai, and fuck, what was the other one? Another one.
I forget, it was
stuff that was like relatively obscure. It was like the most obscure thing ever.
I guarantee you he had never heard of that stuff before because
he just ignored it.
The stuff that he listed off, I was just like, this is all like normie manime stuff. What are you talking about?
Fucking Fist of the North Star.
Ah, like, you didn't know that Fist of the North Star
was like the first big hit for Shonen Jump. And I'm just like, Kinnikuman, like Dr. Slump were out for quite some time before Fist of the North Star came out. But yeah, so what do? So we both put together a semi list, an unordered list of.
Yeah, it's not like we took. So we kind of discussed this, like it's not yeah, like we
so
took
what was
like
your criteria putting this together, because
so
I literally put this together like 5 minutes before recording. I just went through my anime list and was like, yep, that we can go with that. I don't think
I mean, that's about how much we've
talked about on the podcast before. Even
I just basically went through any list since it has the feature to do this and went by popularity. And then went backwards and just picked the ones that I had scored relatively high that I want to talk about.
I didn't really even look at my scores. I was just kind of like, oh, that'd be funny to talk about. Yeah, let's talk about that one, too. I think more people need to at least know that this exists.
It was funny because, like, I kind of wanted to do this. Like, I started thinking about it. Like, it kind of got, like, stuck in my brain a little bit. Because, like, when we were shitposting on Twitter with people, at one point, like, someone said something like, oh, you've clearly never seen these anime or whatever. And I just made the point of, like, oh, most of them are, like, almost all these anime are, like, the most entry-level shit imaginable. I don't know
why you would assume that. It's because, like, one of the first replies I got was about, like, dude, how is Demon Slayer, like, left-wing? Or, like, how is Demon Slayer right-wing? And I was like, I don't know. I haven't seen it. that really pissed people off even more.
It was great. But like I said they're like entry level, and then someone was like, oh, Bakemonogatari Goddard is not entry level.
No,
it is. I started thinking, because like if you're defining entry, because like that's why I started thinking about the full spectrum of like what is obscure, what is like entry level, like how do you even define this shit? Because like if you're defining entry level as like a show that you're most likely to start watching anime with as like your first anime, then Bakemonogatari is probably not entry level.
No, but it's more than likely going to be within, like, if you watch 100 anime, it's probably going to be in there.
I was being more lenient or generous with the criteria, I guess, where I was saying like if it's within the first like 200 to 300 anime, I would say it's pretty entry level.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't even just going by just the first 100.
Which, I mean, to be fair, we're talking about like averages here, not like what any specific person watched as like their first like 300 anime. If you, for example, if you're listening to this and you've seen like less than 300 anime, and then you go and watch all these things that we're going to talk about today, it's like, all right. I mean, that's kind of like the exception more than the rule. But yeah, it's stuff that you would generally expect someone to have seen by the time they've seen like X number of anime. That doesn't necessarily mean they have. I haven't fucking seen Demon Slayer or Utena or Steins Gate. Or
I have not watched more than one episode of Black Clover, and that's fucking entry level shit.
Oh yeah, I've not seen any of the big three really.
Yeah, so I started thinking about that, and because like it's weird. Like I started off just going by like popularity on any list, because like it's you're on a database site, right? So it's like, it's weird because like you're already like in a subset of a community where like these people care about this shit. So in one way, it's like valuable because it's like, this is something that matters to people that are into anime. But on the other, it's also like, if your criteria for entry level is like the people who watch anime in their totality, and so you are now like outweighing the people who watch anime who have seen more than like five anime in their life by adding in like hundreds and thousands of people who have only watched like two anime on Netflix. Well,
Because like the people who are like super casual in anime and just like watch whatever's on like Netflix or HBO Max or Disney Plus or whatever, they're probably not logging what they've seen on my anime list.
Yeah. And we were literally just talking to John, and he was talking about how, like, if he goes up to his coworkers, like, you look at, like, the stats, right?
Yeah.
And something like Sailor Moon only has, like, 400,000 people, whereas, like, Steins Gate is, like, one of the most popular anime on the site. But if he were to go to, like, to his coworkers or something, like, a normal average person, and be like, hey, do you know Sailor Moon? They're more than likely going to know, like, just from cultural osmosis.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas,
they've heard that Bare Naked Lady song.
They got the boom, make it
boom like you think. That make me think the wrong thing.
I don't know words. But and you ask them about Steins Gate, they're going to be like, the fuck is that, more than likely.
Yeah.
So it creates, like, this weird criteria that I was trying to, like, parse through in my head of, like, what makes something obscure. Because, like, I think a lot of what I end up picking is usually like older stuff, and it's like,
yeah,
this probably wouldn't have been as obscure as it is now 20, 30 years ago, right?
Yeah, well, something like Kimagure Orange Road now is a pretty niche anime, like, whereas like you go back to like you know, the 90s and like shit, that was
the,
like,
big three.
The, yeah, big three, one of the romance, big three.
The big three rom-coms.
But now it's like, I mean, to a certain extent, there's a problem with how, like, a site like MyAnimeList even lists off, like, what is, like, the most popular anime, because it's just, like, total member count, essentially. It's not focusing on, like,
completed,
how much those, like, that member count is, like, changing within a certain period. Mm-hmm. So, I think I would say that, like, Frieren is a pretty, like, entry-level anime nowadays, but it's not even on like the top 50 of most popular anime in my anime list.
No,
it's below stuff that is like Noragami or Angel Beats, Ass Class.
And there's also like a recency bias too, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like,
there are more people watching anime on my anime list now than there were 15 years ago.
Yeah.
So, where like stuff that was popular, like Death Note or something, is stayed relevant.
Tokyo Ghoul.
Something new coming out, like, what's a good example of like something like 100 Girlfriends or something is probably higher in popularity than its equivalent from like 2009, right?
Yeah,
but
yeah,
and like that equivalent is probably would probably be considered kind of obscure now, but like, that's because this is new and there's a recency bias, and the other one was aired at a time where not as many people are on my anime list, right?
Yeah, there are fewer anime fans overall.
And you see that with like older shows too, where like people that really liked stuff in the early 2000s that were like coming out in the 90s and 80s, like Outlaw Star or something. I could pull it up while I'm talking. I would imagine Outlaw Star is probably pretty low in popularity despite the fact that it aired on Adult Swim, because not as many people watched it. It's 160,000 people, so it's not like terrible, but like considering it was a pretty big property for a period of time on Toonami, that's kind of probably not accurate to like how many people probably have actually seen it, right?
I'm still going through my anime list, and yeah, Frieren's not even in like the top 100 most popular. It's below things like Another and Charlotte. These are not anime the kids are watching. I'm sorry to say.
Do people know Charlotte anymore?
Fans out there. What?
Do people even know, like, the pizza sauce meme anymore? Like,
no.
I forget who it was. I was talking about, like, the fucking, like, Guilty cherry crown. Pie. The cherry pie memes of fucking another. And they were just like, what are you talking about? Like, that is, like, completely just lost on people that are getting an anime now that might watch some things. Like, I'm watching another. Ah, you mean the pie anime?
Kyokai no Kanata has more members than Frieren.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's kind of thing is, like, there's all Golden Time. A lot of these anime are just, like, you know, they blew up really fucking quickly when they first came out. And then over time just kind of, like, died out. Because unlike something like ReZero, it doesn't have new seasons coming out constantly to, like, sustain that interest.
Well, you also had to take into consideration, too, like, something like Golden Time and Kyoka no Kanata or whatever, like, they are older, and so people mm-hmm. will go back and watch those. But the people, there are a lot of, probably people that marked it that have a lot of, there are probably a lot of accounts that are not active anymore, and then will not go add Frieren because they stopped watching anime.
Yeah.
That marked that, but then people who watch Frieren could go back and watch that.
Yeah.
You're always going up, you're never going down unless they
so
just
all
start
this to say is that this bots. Is not an objective criteria, like, this is not an objective list.
Oh no.
If anything, our choices may come across as random or pretentious or arbitrary or nonsensical.
It is pretty arbitrary. We literally just picked five shows. We're like, hey, let's talk about some shows we want people to watch.
You very well could have done this by dartboard.
Yeah, basically. But yeah, the criteria I picked, I tried to keep it relatively eclectic and diverse. I didn't want to just do five indie shorts, right? Like,
Yeah.
Might as well just make an indie short episode. It's if you're gonna do like anime, obscure anime or something. I wanted to run the gambit.
My choices are I would say somewhat varied. I mean, there are no TV series in here. It is still like movies and OVAs, but there's enough variety here. I think you're not gonna believe my number five. I think that's something you're supposed to say. For these
you're
kinds
not going
to
believe what number listen. One is.
People Day are so two. Annoyed that we have not even gotten to the top 10 yet. So what was your first pick then, I guess, if we want to get into that?
So I pulled out like 8 or 9. We're only probably going to go through 5. But like,
yeah,
I want to try and go in reverse order of like probably what's going to be the least obscure to the more obscure.
I'm just going to go with like whatever I put down first. I don't fucking care.
So the first one I picked.
Yeah.
Which more than likely more people have heard of. I picked Armor Hunter Mellow Link.
Oh.
Yeah, it's not super obscure. We're not super deep on the iceberg yet.
No, doesn't that have an Anime Ego release? Or am I losing my mind?
I don't know. Vodum's got a Blu-ray release, and it's not on there. Like, there's a Vodum's collection that's just, like, movies, OVAs, and the TV series. It's got, like...
Yeah.
All this shit, and then it just doesn't have Mellow Link, and it's like, well, fuck you. We might have even talked about it with John.
I have not seen Mellow Link. So what is Mellow Link about?
So Mellow Link, for those who haven't watched Kenny Lauderdale's video reviewing it, it's basically about like this revenge story where this guy was in a platoon of these kind of. Yeah, these people that just got thrown into the battlefield as like cannon fodder during this like mecha war or whatever.
Yeah, I've seen Pat Labor too.
Yeah, they weren't given they were not given mechs, and they're just like, yeah, just go out there and fight them off. And they're like, the fuck, we can't do that. And like all of them died except one. And so he's on this revenge campaign to take out like all the higher ups, generals, stuff like that. That like basically. Caused it to happen for whatever reason, like that framed him and He had to like run off and hide and shit. The premise itself is very simple. It's not like you're not really watching it for to like deconstruct or like really analyze the story or the plot or anything. Mm-hmm. But it's very effective as like a backdrop and to what you're watching, like action wise. Because it was very, very good when it came to like the actual animation and action and stuff. Because it's like, for one, it's like an OVA series, so it's not a TV series.
Yeah, yeah. This is like a this is like late 80s, and then what, like
late 80s?
Votoms was early 80s,
82, I believe,
something like that. And I think, because like Dogram was like what, 81?
Yeah, I think so. It is, it
this
is,
isn't as boring as Dogram, is it?
No, hell no. So it's okay. It's directed by the guy who did Mobile Suit Gundam 8th MS team.
Yeah, I would say 8th MS team, looking at his, like, yeah.
Ryosuke Takahashi, who notably did The Fable this year, last
Ryosuke
year.
Ryosuke Takahashi is, like, the creator. It's directed by
Kanda. I clicked the wrong guy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I got the 8th MS team right. But, yeah, it's directed by the guy who did 8th MS team, so it's kind of similar in that, in how it's, like, action-focused. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily as silly where you're going to be like really turned off, like, oh my God, because people mm-hmm. really hate 8th MS team for some reason. I understand. I'm not like that deep into it, I guess.
So this is what people wanted 8th MS team to be, where it's like very serious and gritty. And
I mean, 8th MS team's pretty serious. It's just does some silly things. Mm-hmm. With its plot.
So this is not a silly anime, is what you're saying.
He's just Miller Link is a silly guy, all right? but not like it's very like creative with its set pieces, and like, because it's him fighting with like a sniper rifle that's like a mech, and mm-hmm. so it allows him to like take out mechs, but he is just running around without a mech.
Right.
It was basically like a fucking Dark Souls fight or something.
Kind of like a Rambo thing.
He's like having to outmaneuver a fucking mech.
Guerrilla warfare. I'm just thinking of like that scene out of like Saving Private Ryan or something like that. Where like the tank rolls up and everyone's like, we're all dead. Fuck.
We're fucked. But yeah, it does some interesting set pieces. Like he fights them in a jungle at one point or whatever. Mm-hmm. They fight on like a ship that's been like wrecked from the war in Votoms. That's okay, just so like,
this is the same universe as Votoms.
It is the same universe.
But is there much continuity?
No, there's okay. like zero. I mean, outside of just knowing like there's a war and stuff and what the scope dogs are and shit,
mm-hmm. Okay.
you can just watch this on its own. You don't need to watch the TV.
Yeah. Didn't you watch this before Votoms?
No. No, I watched this after.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So this is like somewhat recent then.
Yeah, I watched this a year ago.
Okay, wow.
Yeah. I only watched Votoms like toward the end of 2023 and
something like that, yeah.
Beginning of 2024.
Like a little bit after we watched Dogram.
We watched Dogram in 2022, didn't we?
Yeah, I don't I honestly don't remember.
I
choose not to remember.
I wanted to watch Dogram because people like talked it up. And then like, I also wanted to watch Votoms, but then we watched mm-hmm. Dogram and it kind of like killed my enthusiasm to watch Votoms. But then like, I don't know, one day I was just like, I'll just sit down and watch it. And Votoms is much better than Dogram, I think.
Mm-hmm. So why is Mellow Link then on the list? So what's your rationale?
It was relatively obscure, but not super obscure. So
hold on. Well, let me see. Let me pull it up on my anime list real quick. We'll see how obscure it is. Okay. MELLOWLINK.
Can't believe I'm fact checked live on.
Yeah, let's get you fact checked. 11,000 members, Mumi, total. Fucking
that's
normie,
a lot of
casual.
People.
That's a lot. All right.
It is,
some
it is
of my
surprising.
Picks don't even have 1,000, I don't think.
I mean, I tried to do the cutoff of like, kind of around 11,000. Like, I didn't really like look at the number of members on the list, but like, I think I got to a point where I was like seeing like Beautiful Dreamer and stuff. I'm like, okay.
That was kind of like my thing as well. I was like, I started at the bottom, sorted by popularity, and I started like scrolling up. And yeah, once I started to get to stuff where it's like, okay, well, like, there's like Kaiba or whatever, and it's like, okay, maybe I need to scroll back down.
We're getting too far up on the iceberg here. Yeah, we need to go back into the depths. But yeah, if you feel like watching a fun action series, it's basically just like Rambo, where he fights fucking mechs with a fucking sniper rifle.
Some real robot stuff.
It's got the scope dogs, which is like the best part of Autumns, honestly. Those are fucking really cool mechs.
One of the coolest spec designs of all time, honestly.
Yeah. Like, they're very kind of like realistic. In relation to like Gundam or something, right?
Right. Yeah,
like, the RX-78 is not super realistic.
No. It's very, like, it doesn't look like equipment. That looks like an action figure. Whereas this is more,
this is
scope dogs. Yeah. Feel much more like weapons.
Yeah. Check it out if you are so inclined. Sai, what would you pick for your number five slot?
Gosenzo-sama Banbanzai.
Oh no, I spoiled it. Now I see why you're reluctant to list your other ones.
Yeah. So Gosenzo-sama Banbanzai is a OVA that ran from like 1989 to 1990, that's written and directed by Mamoru Oshii. And the basic premise is, it's about this family who one day this woman shows up at their door and basically says that she's the daughter or granddaughter, I think granddaughter, of the son in the family. And she traveled back in time to meet them. And it's about watching this family basically turn on each other and fall apart. it's not one for everyone, but it's definitely one for me, because it's for me because it's not for everyone. And I think it's really funny to like show it to people and they're like, what the hell are we watching? He's been like deliberating with this monologue about whether or not he should open this door for the past like 5 minutes.
It's very like theatrical coded.
Yeah. Very, overtly so in some ways, because like character, like the whole show is framed basically is like as a stage play, and there will usually be like one, maybe two like sets, quote unquote, in an episode. And the way it's like framed by and large is almost like a sitcom, even, where you have like your three walls and then like the audience is the, you know, quote unquote, fourth wall, essentially.
And they stay on that for like it doesn't change angles very quickly. Rapidly, like it'll stay on like the wide shot of the room, and then like the characters are just kind of acting out and like this unmoving camera perspective.
Yeah, very, very long takes, which lends itself to very, like, I would say pretty impressive character animation. And there's a lot of like interesting like big names on the staff listing for animation for this OVA, like early-ish, I'd say Mitsuo Iso shows up and does one of the strangest scenes, I think, in anime ever, where a guy wearing like a red Coca-Cola uniform is playing piano in the water as Coke cans. There's weird product placement in it, by the way, like Coca-Cola and Kodak for some fucking reason. Like, Coke cans are, like, being washed ashore, and, I don't know, he's singing about something. I don't really know what. The show itself is fairly, like, inscrutable in a way that I've come to expect from Mamoru Oshii, where he's just yapping. He's talking about something. Every episode starts off with like something about birds, something about birds, I guess. And it's there's a commentary about family or fate or something, kind of like Star Wars, really.
That's what I recommend these two.
If you like the Star Wars sequels, you should watch Gosenzo Sama Banbanzai.
There's a lot of red herrings with the birds.
I mean, it's probably similar to like a thing like you know why he put the pigeons in Pat Labor 2? Like the bird imagery in Pat Labor 2 is just kind of there to be like noise almost. Like it's intentionally meaningless in order to add like a chaotic element of like that, like, you know, him as the director does not have absolute control over like a live action film. Yeah, it's if you like weird stuff, I definitely recommend checking it out. It's got a very dry kind of just cynical sense of humor. I would say it's pretty well animated, but when I say that I kind of mean it in a very specific way, because you look at it and you're like, it's like, I mean, in some shots, like the way the characters are drawn, they almost look like puppets, because like you can see like they leave in like the joints and stuff for these characters. So like they'll have like
paper puppets, yeah,
on like their elbows and stuff. And even then, like the animation itself can look kind of choppy, but you compare it to. And there's a really interesting blog post about this as well that I'll see if I can like link. But it basically talks about how like for the longest time, the way that animation was handled in anime is you would have somewhat complex character designs with fairly high line counts. And the way that they would approach this is that you would have fairly limited key animation frames and then primarily rely upon in-between frames to do a lot of the heavy lifting in terms of like communicating the actual motion. Whereas with Gosenzo-sama, Banbanzai, it's kind of the opposite, where keyframes kind of suck. The in-between frames kind of suck, but there's a lot more, like, you look, again, that's kind of like Mitsuhiso's whole thing, is like tons and tons of like keyframes relative to the in-betweens. So that lends itself to much more elaborate motion. And that's obviously then also assisted by the fact that the character designs are comparatively simple as well. They're very, very minimalist. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you want a show to like to scare the maidens, I think Gosenzo-sama is probably up there. It's like almost Monogatari-esque in a certain way, where you watch it and you're like, okay, this is fucking weird and I'm off put and I'm uncomfortable watching this, but it's even more than that, because now like Gosenzo-sama takes it to the point where it's like, I'm uncomfortable with the subject matter you're bringing up and I would appreciate it if you stopped.
it did remind me a lot of Bakke, except with, instead of French New Wave, it's like a one act play.
Yeah. So if you like that kind of idiosyncratic elements to something that you'd see in like a Monogatari, and you like Mamoru Oshii for stuff like Beautiful Dreamer and things like that, if anything, you could almost and I'd have to go back and check. I think Gosenzo-sama even like started off as like or at least he was borrowing elements from like a rejected script that he had for Urusei Yatsura or something. It's kind of like an evil Urusei Yatsura in a way, because you have the magical girl kind of character that shows up, and this like fucking weird asshole family. And instead of like things just kind of continuing on as they were in Urusei Yatsura, it's okay, now everyone is turning on each other and it's becoming a nightmare.
I never actually made that connection before.
Once you kind of like see it, you're like, oh. Yeah, she is just kind of like an evil lum.
Evil lum.
Not even like, oh, she's like overtly evil in terms of like, she's like corrupting this family. More so just her presence is chaotic in and of itself.
I wonder so how much of, like, his experience on Usa Yatsar actually, like, influenced that.
Yeah, I don't know. There's, I mean, I definitely talked about it. I'm just, like, blanking on, like, some of, like, the more specific stuff that he's, like, said about it. But, yeah. And then also, yeah, I think if you're like, an 80s Sakuga nerd, I mean, you've probably already seen it, if that's the case. But if not, I think it's definitely a must-watch in that regard as well.
Good OVA. I also recommend it.
Yeah.
Well, my number four... I guess I'll go with the wildly popular Kogepan.
Oh my god.
I don't know what the reaction is.
Well, because, like, I mean, this is something you've been wanting to make a video on for ages, isn't it?
Yeah, I do want to make a video on it. I'm not really sure how I would approach this kind of video because mm-hmm. it's so short.
It is like 40 minutes. I've not seen Kogepan either. So what's it about, even, apart from bread?
It is literally just the story of a piece of bread who I don't think they are technically, like, sentient to other people. So, like, they sell the bread and they're, like, cheering and stuff. I do not think that they're actually, like, the people are like, oh yes, I'm gonna eat this cheering child. But
oh, so it's like what's food party, what's that fucking, like, movie,
the,
like,
one the talking that food. Fucking the Family Guy dude,
yeah, what the fuck was that? Sausage party.
Yeah,
not to be confused with Food Fight, although I think those are similar movies.
I would think that they were the same movie, honestly. You just put them side by side.
Yeah, I can't tell the difference.
So it's about this piece of bread that actually got left in the oven because it, like, fell off the tray or something and it got a bit burnt. And so now it's...
And it's a revenge story.
Yes. Yes, he's out to murder the baker.
I'm seeing a common thread with your picks.
basically it's just about how he has lost his purpose in life, because he is a piece of burnt bread that nobody wants.
So it's kind of like, that Korean, like, stop motion thing that we watched, Doggy Poo.
Yeah. It's kind of similar to that.
Mm-hmm.
Except it's by, Son X, which is, the competitor to Sanrio in Japan.
So it's, like, also product placement.
It is a mascot character. It's not really product placement in the sense of it's not, like, advertising anything outside of just the mascot character.
But so it's like a Penguin's Memories type thing, basically.
Similar, yeah. So Kogepan is just, like, this. It's not even, like, a super successful mascot. Obviously, there's, like, mascots that, like, eclipse him from Sonic. Afro Ken comes to mind. The dog that wears sunglasses with the rainbow afro, you might know of.
Maybe, but, like, just based on your description, I have an image in my head now that I can't get out, so that's gonna stick with me forever.
This was done by Perot. It wasn't directed by anybody that was, like, super. I mean, he's done, like, some other stuff after. Like, he did some in-betweens on Look Back here recently. Some key animation stuff, but, like, it's not like he's, like, known for anything specifically. And it's just kind of, like, out of left field. It's just, like, it's literally just, like, a child. It's because it's made for children.
Okay.
Like, it's not like, was it Gloomy Bear or something, where it's just, like, hyper violent some shit?
Yeah.
Or Gretzko, so which is clearly. So this is meant
to put the fear of God in the children.
Yeah, it deals with existentialism for kids.
Oh.
And so it's basically just him kind of just finding how he fits into the world now that his, like, purpose in life has just been stripped away from him.
His purpose was to be eaten.
Yes. And that's kind of a thing, because, like, he realizes, like, oh, if I had just been bought and eaten, I would have never met the friends that I have met and got to know and love.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's not so bad that I'm burnt and ugly and.
Is there like a wonderful life scene, like where he's like just sitting on a bridge about to kill himself or something?
No, it never gets like suicidal. He's just like, he is a very depressed character. Like you see like in the promotional He's just sitting with like in the fetal position and he just kind of has this blank expression. He is a cool character, honestly. It's like a mascot character.
That's a really nice character design. Feels like something I would see like a 90s like alt rock album cover kind of thing.
But this was a TV short. They're 4-minute episodes. There's 10 of them, so it is 40 minutes. It's basically the length of an movie or OVA or something.
Yeah.
So you could watch it all in one sitting if you so choose, or you could watch it in episode pieces, chunks, whatever.
Maybe eat some bread while you're doing it.
Some bread.
Eat some toast.
Burn some toast.
Burn some toast. And, you ever eat burnt toast? It, like, disintegrates to ash in your mouth. It's fucking awful.
No, I've never actually. Like, if it's that burnt, I just don't eat it. Kind of bougie that way.
So when you're starving, you'll eat anything, okay?
True.
Not that I've ever been there, of course.
No, I've been there.
What would you describe the overall tone as? Is it
funny? It's kind of comedic. Yeah, it's a comedic kind of thing. Okay. It typically is juxtaposing his cynicism of the world, because like he's just been beat down by life, and like you have all these like the new baked bread, because like they always cycle through new bread like every day.
Okay. And so
the new baked breads come out, and they're all bright eyed and young and full of energy and hope. And he's just like, you kids. You don't understand. The world sucks. They're just like,
nothing matters.
Nothing really matters. And they're just like, oh my God.
But this isn't like, it's not like absurdist humor, like a Banana or something like that.
No, there's not like that element of, it's absurd in that they're bread, but it's not juxtaposing it against anything where you're just like, oh my God, this is insane.
Yeah.
Is that like Mole Car? it is very, very short, very fun. It is something that I always try to talk about. Don't really have much of a reason to talk about it though. For obvious reasons.
But and that's why you should watch it, because there's nothing to talk about.
You should watch it because nobody else has.
And nobody else has. It's like 40 fucking minutes. I don't know. It sounds pretty nice.
Yeah. I mean, I recommend it. It's. I watched it for the first time. What? Shit. It's probably been almost a decade ago now. 2014. Yeah. A decade. May 2014. And it has stuck with me consistently for 11 years almost. So that should say something. What is something that stuck with you that long, Psiotic?
Chlamydia.
Oh. Herpes. What about like number four obscure anime or something?
So number four is I think the most recent thing I have on here, and it's technically not even really animation. My number four pick is Violence Voyager.
Oh.
A B horror movie, quote unquote, by this director who goes by the mononym Ujicha. And when I say it's not animation, it's closer to like puppetry, essentially, because you have these like little painted like paper cutouts that are then like, kind of just being like paraded around these sets, and swaps them out and stuff. If anyone listening is remotely familiar with the Cat-Eyed Boy anime from like the 1970s, it's that basically. It's an animation technique called Gekimation. Kind of almost similar to like what you'd see with like a Yamashibai kind of thing. So he takes that animation style and transposes it in this movie into like this almost like Goosebumps horror premise where it's like these kids and they go to this amusement park out in the wilderness, and there's this creepy guy running in, and he lets them in, and from there it descends into one of the most disgusting horror movies I think I've ever seen. I would say that it, in part because of the animation technique, like you look at something like Maiden Abyss and the sorts of gore and viscera in Maiden Abyss, and this doesn't quite get on that level, like in terms of like how like much blood there is, but because of the way it's conveyed, it's so much more uncomfortable and unpleasant. And conceptually, there are some things as well that I would say are up there with Maiden Abyss, where it's like, oh, this kid is now like, their skin has been burned off with acid and stuff, and like they're hooking like tubes up to his asshole, and like there's like, it, like, and he's using like actual fluids as well. So like you'll have like the paper cut out, and there'll be like a tube run out through the back of it, and it's like, you know, putting like, he's like, you know, pumping like fake vomit through like the character's like paper cutout mouth, and it's actual like fluid, and it's like, oh, this is gross and
depraving. Sounds very innovative, though.
It is. Oh, it's incredibly fun to watch and just see the movie downward spiral to the point you get to the end, and he's like joined with like these forest animals to take down the villain, and it's like, what the fuck is even happening at this point? It's similar to Cold Senseless Love, it devolves into chaos by the end. It's not a movie if you're squeamish, I'd say. But if you like horror and you like cult horror stuff, I think this is honestly a must watch, because, and I think this movie did better in terms of like, you know, like this sort of like underground film crowd. If you look up like reviews for it on YouTube, and there are reviews for it, they're all from like people who are like movie people, and like no one who's like really into anime talked about this movie at all, because it's fucking disgusting. That's my sell on it. Yeah, it's like, imagine you take like a Goosebumps premise, and at the start it even has like that kind of like Goosebumps tone to it, you know, it takes place during like autumn, you know, so like the leaves are falling down, and it's kind of got this like just a generally eerie atmosphere to it, and then by the end it's like, I don't understand, how did we even get from A to B? what is happening? Holy fucking shit, this is gross.
You've talked about it very consistently since you've seen it, and I missed this watch, so.
Oh, have you not seen it still?
I have not seen it still. This is well documented. I'm terrible about watching movies.
This is okay? True. I've seen it a number of times, and every time I watch it, I'm just like, why the fuck would you do this? I think it's on Amazon Prime dubbed, and I believe I own a Blu-ray double pack as well from, I think it's Arrow Films. They did a release of this movie and also the director's previous work, Burning Buddha Man, which is also weird, but I wouldn't say is like as well structured or just overall put together as Violence Voyager. Violence Voyager is a pretty good just overall horror movie. But yeah, if you want to get like a physical copy, you can get it from them. It's on Amazon Prime dubbed, and I wouldn't even advise against watching the dub, because the dub also has that kind of like, it adds to that kind of like hokiness almost of like that B film quality. Mm-hmm. So it feels like something that like, if this movie came out in the 90s, it feels like something you would find in like the back of a video store and be like, all right, yeah, let's see what this is. This looks like something that's appropriate for children. And you put it on for like, you're like 10 or 12 year old, and by the end of the movie they're fucking traumatized.
Just like South Park or Beavis and Butthead.
Oh yeah, just, you know, like whenever they kill Kenny in South Park, it's just like that, but If instead of Kenny getting crushed by something, it's like he's been like flayed alive and put back together with the body parts of other people.
Is that what that's about?
It's a hard movie to like. If you watch Made in Abyss and you're like, oh, that's pretty fucked up and vile. This is worse. I'm gonna be honest. This is like, oh, the sounds, the fucking sound design, just, oh god, so unpleasant. It's wonderful.
I will say, Made in Abyss is like unsettling in a interesting way.
Well, Made in Abyss has that element where it's like, oh yeah, also Sukuchi, the author, is like a fucking pervert, so you have this uncomfortable sexual element to a lot of the violence. This doesn't have that. Oh, but what it has is gross. I think that's the only way I can really describe it. It's the only word that can like really come up is
But yeah, if you
it
wanna...
almost has like that, like kind of like you look at how like someone like David Lynch handles gore. And it's like, it's technically not like, you know, it's not like a bloodbath, not like a blood fest, but the way like David Lynch handles violence is in a very viscerally uncomfortable and just affecting way. And I would say that Violence Voyager is similar.
Hmm. So yeah, if you want to watch it and tell Sai what a bitch baby is, because it wasn't anywhere as graphic as you thought. By the sound, let us know in the comments down below.
maybe I am overselling people. Like, hey, it's not, it wasn't that bad, but for me, it's like,
it hits that right sweet spot of unsettling. I feel like that there's like people have like their own weird like boundaries in that regard, where it's like I can watch a lot of like gore shit and just kind of be like, whatever.
Yeah.
But then like something like One Guy, One Jar really bothered me because of like specifically the way that he's like digging at it for
you didn't like expect an extended that to be brought period up on of time.
And it's just like the blood is just pooling. And I was
Well, yeah. Cause like for me, it's like, it is like violent and it is like gory, but it's not like doing it in a way of like, you know, your big Hollywood, you know, like horror film kind of thing.
Right.
A lot of it also just comes down to like, this is conceptually unpleasant to think about, like what is happening on screen.
Mm.
Yeah. Check it out.
Check it out.
Check it out. If you want to feel kind of miserable.
Sorry, I flashbanged everyone with the fucking One Guy, One Jar image. It just felt relevant, all right? I don't know what to say. Speaking of relevant, my number three that I'm going to talk about, Chikuboe Kazoku, or the Daichi's Earth Defense Family.
Oh, I also haven't seen this one.
I think I don't know if they found it. I don't know if there was a specific person that found it, but they did watch it in the server, to just Discord server. I did not watch it with them, mm-hmm. but they talked about it a lot, and I was like, maybe I should check this out. Yeah, I remember
you watching it and really hyping it up.
It was really good. Mm-hmm. So it's from like it's like one of the last Cell animated shows. It's not like the last.
Yeah,
but it's one of the last one, like last few handful or whatever, where like they actually redid an episode on an OVA, and that OVA episode was all digital because it had already cut over at that point.
Hmm.
It's created by Shoji Kawamori, who you may recognize from Macross, Aquarion, what else has he done? Fuck.
He did that one thing.
He did the one thing.
He did that thing. Escaflowne.
Oh yeah, Escaflowne.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's mainly known for Macross, obviously. Oh, Eureka 7. People know him for Eureka 7. This work that he did on that.
And Spring and Chaos.
I think he's just in the mech.
Is on my list technically, but I'll save that for another day.
So it's basically almost all done. Like, he's the original creator, scriptwriter, and everything, but he didn't direct it.
Okay.
It was directed by Tetsu Kimura, who mainly is kind of just a script storyboarder.
Okay. But,
it is very interesting.
So what's it about?
It's about a family, the Daichis.
Okay.
And they're very dysfunctional as a family. Okay. And just one day out of the blue, some like alien thing appears. And it's like, y'all have to defend the planet from an alien invasion. And they're just like, what? And they're basically given like Super Sentai powers or whatever.
This feels like it would be like a segment in My Neighbor the Yamadas almost.
It could be, outside of the fact that it goes way harder than anything the Yamadas would have got. Like, and I don't necessarily mean that as in it it is cooler, even though it is. Yeah. I mean that as in they are legitimately getting a divorce.
Oh. And
the kids are like trying to deal with the fact that their family is falling apart while having to defend the planet and being, it's kind of similar to like Ava in that way, where it's like,
why am I kind of thing.
Why am I doing this for people when things look so bleak? Like, why are we fighting to hold the planet together when my family can't even keep itself together? There's like a part, mild spoiler, but there's a part where like the mom is on like a date and acts like she doesn't know her son because she hasn't told the guy she's dating that she has kids yet.
Oh,
and it is bad. It is like, oh, oh, like that is, she legitimately was like, I don't even hate the mom. But that moment, I was usually like really pissed. I was like, holy shit, you're a fucking bitch.
Yeah. So it was like, is it depressing or like, how does it navigate that? I guess. Is it always like a balance of tones?
It is very off the wall, I would say, because like, it is very silly a lot of the time. Like, the dad is this fat guy. he's just like, oh, I don't want to do anything. And then like, he transforms and he looks like fucking Peter Griffin. Like, he's literally censored by his own like stomach or whatever during the transformation. And it's just very silly in that way. It kind of reminds me of, I don't know, like a standard like mecha kids show of that time period where like they do very like crazy things,
yeah. But
it's like it kind of returns to the status quo or whatever. The thing that resonates, I think, the most about it and what makes it work though is the sort of contemplativeness of it, because like it does all this very silly stuff, but then there's like this core of like authenticity to it where like there's like an episode where they're doing like training and stuff so that they can better fight the aliens or whatever and protect people, and the daughter's like really wrestling like, why are we doing this? I want to like live my life. I keep being dragged around to do this stuff, and it's just like I feel like I have no agency essentially. And so she like tries to skip to like go to a concert she wanted to go to and stuff like there's a lot of like authenticity to it that makes it really work, even though it is very silly and very out there. But it does like go very all over the place totally, but I think it works. So if you want to watch like a family falling apart and kids like navigate and try to understand the world and like reconcile the fact that their family is falling apart through the lens of a Super Sentai-esque kind of show. Mm-hmm. Check it out.
Yeah, sounds like it's a watching a family fall apart, but from a much more earnest perspective than Go Senzo-sama. Or is Go Senzo-sama? I mean,
very cynical.
They, at the end, they kind of come together as a family, but then it ends, and you're like, oh yeah, these all are kind of like horrible people. This is incredibly dysfunctional.
No, yeah, this is like they're. You kind of get the sense that like they are good people because they are like still working together. They are trying to like bond and then be together and for each other when they need to.
Yeah,
be.
Yeah.
But they are like, this relationship is not working.
Right.
So it's kind of like the standard sort of like, you know, mom and dad still love you, even though we're not going to be together, that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
But I would say it's kind of, I mean, it kind of works for kids, but it's still, I feel like it is more aimed toward an older audience, at least. It's not like a Kogepon or something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Check it out. It is very good.
My number three is a trilogy of films, actually. It is the Toei Romance of the Three Kingdoms trilogy.
Oh boy.
Which, these might be the greatest anime movies ever made. Certainly the greatest anime movies ever made that seemingly no one has fucking heard of. I think they all three of these movies still have under 1,000 members on my anime list.
Yeah.
Which is a damn shame because these movies are insane. They're almost like the Lord of the Rings of anime in a way, because so it's an adaptation of Romance of the Three Kingdoms, which is this massive sprawling Chinese war epic that mm-hmm. is like, I think the book itself is like longer than like all of Harry Potter combined or something like that, all of Lord of the Rings combined. It's a really long, complicated book that covers like over 100 years of Chinese history. And it's by and large condensed down into a trilogy of still very long anime movies. I think these are some of the longest animated movies of all time because they're all like 2.5 hours. So you sit down and you start watching it and it's like you're locked in for 2.5 hours and it's just like boom, 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 boom. It's like the pacing is unrelenting. It like there's all these characters and there are characters that like, you know, you will still like, you know, recognize and like, OK, that's the main character. You know, that's Liu Bei or like Cao Cao. But then also there's a bunch of like side characters, almost like a Legend of the Galactic Heroes. And you're like, wait, what's happening? Who are these people? Oh, and the way every movie ends, too, it's also like, by the way, everything this movie covered was actually just a small part of this much broader conflict happening in China at the time. It's like, what the fuck? They don't even really get to the proper Three Kingdoms until the third movie. So yeah, they're incredibly dense movies. They are exhausting to watch because they are like very intense. And that's not necessarily in terms of like, oh, it's just like, you know, cause it's like really like a red liner or something like that, where it's like just really blood pumping, as much as it is like the animation is so beautiful, you can't look away. It's one of the most gorgeous works of Japanese animation of all time, I'd say.
Yeah.
Beautiful backgrounds, incredibly elaborate and expansive, like character animation is such.
It's very such colorful. Opulent.
Yeah, the colors are insane. I don't think these movies were cheap to make. I think so. They came out in the early 90s, and I think that in total, I think they cost maybe like a billion yen to produce, maybe a little bit more, which at the time was like, the movies were marketed with the tagline spectacle animation. And it is a spectacle, to say the least. And I think that's the main reason to watch these movies, is because it's like, there's nothing else really like them in anime. The closest would be like Princess Mononoke. But even then, Princess Mononoke feels like comparatively quaint. Like, you watch like the first movie, and that opening scene of like Liu Bei, like, you know, leading like and, you know, basically herding all of these horses, and it's like, oh my god, this is like gorgeous.
I've only seen the first movie. It felt very much every bit of the 2.5 hours that it had, like. And that is a bad thing. It's a bad thing in the sense of, like, it makes it a little bit harder for someone like me to watch. But it is that way because of, like, how dense it is. Because there's so much shit going. I don't know.
It covers so much ground.
I don't know how great this is as an introduction to the Three Kingdoms.
No. I mean, there's, like, the manga adaptation.
The Ravages of Time.
The
Tezuka one?
No, it's not. It wasn't Tezuka. It was Yokoyama.
Oh, Yokoyama. Yeah, it just kind of looks like Tezuka. That's what I was thinking of.
Which there's also an anime adaptation of that as well. Son Goku. Which, by the way, I mean, if you're gonna read Yokoyama's Son Goku-shi manga. That's also one of the longest manga ever written, so good luck with that. There's getting into Romance of the Three Kingdoms, like, you know the character from Prison School that's like a Three Kingdoms nerd?
Yeah.
Romance of the Three Kingdoms is kind of like One Piece, where if you're getting into it, like, that's your personality.
I mean,
that's
it probably eclipses One Piece in terms of, like, just sheer size.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, yeah, because there's so much Three Kingdoms media. It's
well, you got like the manga you're talking about. You got like the Ravages of Time manga, which is the art of that is fucking insane, by the way.
You have the Romance of the Three Kingdoms Koei Tecmo games, as well as Dynasty Warriors, which I think Dynasty Warriors may actually be a better introduction to Romance of the Three Kingdoms, honestly. But yeah, if you're someone who likes anime, likes the animation in anime, I mean, I can't recommend these movies enough, if only because no one has fucking seen them, and more people need to watch these movies, because the popularity they have relative to the, like, scale and scope of the movies is like, there's an insane disparity there. It's almost if like Lord of the Rings were like an obscure indie film from like the 2000s.
It is.
Like, they are, I would say they are on that level in terms of, like, I don't know if anime has really come close to that level of, like, opulence and size since.
I feel like if you like Legend of Galactic Heroes, you would probably like this.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
But this is like much more of a spectacle visually. Legend of Galactic Heroes is very subdued because, you know, it's obviously a space opera and very long.
Right.
This is like insane.
Yeah. This is like you're watching. It is a Chinese war epic. You know, you look at something like, I don't know if anyone listening has ever seen or heard of like the Red Cliffs movies from China, which are like these, like, it's, Red Cliffs is just a single battle in Romance of the Three Kingdoms that and it happens like at the end of like the second movie. So there's all this buildup, all this stuff happens before that, and then so much stuff happens after. To a certain extent, it's impossible to adapt Romance of the Three Kingdoms into a series of movies. But on the other hand, you know, it's again, you're watching it. You know, the story is still good. I still like the characters in it. And, you know, there are like you know, pretty like emotionally moving scenes in it. But yeah, I think the main draw is just like, man, they are insane to just like look at, and they're a marvel essentially. Yeah, I don't know if you like the your boy Kong Ming, that's where he's from. So now go watch Joe's video on your boy Kong Ming. I actually use clips from those movies in my segment in that video. So
check it out. Speaking of Chinese,
oh,
my number two, I feel like people will balk because not anime. I will consider this anime. Shan Shui Xing.
Ah,
yeah, the goat short.
There are no goats in this, by the way.
No, there's no goats in this.
There's no goats.
So this is a very simple short.
Yes.
Like it's there's no dialogue.
No.
It's all done through just ambience and music.
Yep.
But it tells a very simple story of like a child basically becoming an apprentice to some wandering instrumentalist. They're playing
like a fiddle or something.
I think it's called a guqin.
Some instrument.
It's basically like a theremin, but you know, before electricity.
I guess that's one way you could describe it.
But yeah, it's named after like the
well, it's a style of like Chinese landscape painting, basically.
Yes. So if you think of like the old kind of like parchment Japanese Chinese like landscape paintings of like the cliffs and stuff like that,
like the mountains and stuff, and like you got the birds and the trees and the
yeah, that is what this looks like.
Big rock candy mountains. Yeah, well, that's like the whole. It leans very heavily into that style. Like obviously, like the backgrounds, but also the characters themselves almost have this kind of like watercolory ink look to them.
Yeah. It's a very unique art style that I don't.
Yes.
I think I've seen out of other stuff out of Weta.
Yeah.
But not necessarily like an anime, which is probably because it is a Chinese like painting style.
Right.
But it's very, very simple. Just the story of like meeting somebody and how they impact your life in a large way, despite not necessarily being a large part of your life.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they just fuck off and die, sure. You know, just disappear, leave. And,
but similarly, I think there's also like a big draw of it is the visuals. Also, compared to Rosie and the Three Kingdoms, it's like 20 minutes long.
Oh yeah, no, this is like you just go watch it on YouTube and after this, podcast.
So this is a brief walk in the park, so it's just like, oh, this is again just yeah, gorgeous to look at.
It's very, very contemplative.
Yes, yeah. Again, well, like there's no dialogue and stuff. It's a lot of like just kind of light music and ambience. Lots of these like landscape paintings and stuff.
Lots of mood. It is a mood.
My impression of the movie was basically it's about a young boy getting groomed.
Oh.
By an older man. It's a movie about pederasty, much like Star Wars.
It's about family. Like pottery.
Yeah, it is just on YouTube. You can just go watch it, and you really, really you probably should, because it is just like, especially if you like something like those kind of like moodier pieces, like An Angel's Egg or something like that, where it's like very atmospheric. Like, yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
This is some peak atmosphere.
Fucking great. It is probably the best thing I've seen out of Weta. Granted, I haven't seen his entire catalog, but
yeah, I think I've only the only other thing I've seen is Moody, which is about a bull.
Yeah, I didn't care for that one.
Or something. I don't think I've seen anything else from him.
I don't even know how,
which is also worth pointing out. You look at this and you're like, oh, this must be like a fairly old, like this is from like the 40s or 50s. No, it's from like 1980s. 1988, 1989. So
part of that's probably just poor preservation.
Part maybe. Of that is just I don't know if this has ever actually been properly released in HD.
No, it definitely hasn't. At least not in any way that someone's like released it online in HD.
Yeah, well, I guess there is like this is like 720, but it's kind of a low quality 720.
Yeah, it's probably just compressed or something.
Yeah. But I mean, that's fine. It still looks beautiful regardless.
Really, honestly, kind of just adds a bit to the atmosphere of it, I guess.
I can see that. Yeah,
kind of just gives it that old watercolor look.
I think it works.
I would. Granted, I would still like if they had like a good remastering of it. But I don't think it kills it.
Mm-hmm.
I would highly recommend it.
My next pick is kind of a series, kind of a body of work from an individual. It's a Vapor Trail. Which I think I've talked about. I've talked about a little bit on here before, but Vapor Trail is one entry in a series of, I think, loosely connected independent animations done by almost entirely done by this animator on YouTube who goes by Ash. Mm-hmm. And the reason I want to talk about these is because I think they very capture what I like about independent animation. I talked about this in a previous episode where, you know, the drawings are very rough, but at the same time, that kind of lends itself to like the idea that like, oh, this was made by human hands. Essentially, the fact that they do have flaws to them is like, you know, it kind of gives like the drawings their own kind of like humanity in a sense, to make it sound very pretentious and profound. But also, I think it just has a really. Ash, as a creator, I think it has a very interesting career to follow. I've been aware of his work for a number of years now, and we group watched the three things that he's done so far, which is like Vapor Trail,
Penetrate this Blue.
Penetrate Blue, Vapor Trail, Another Age, 2824, and then the current thing that he's doing is this series called Wasare Hoshi no Volusia.
Mm-hmm.
So we watched those three things in our server, and you can't actually, like, you know, you could see him improve his craft over those three films. And I think also the fact that, like, these are all like 30 minutes a piece, and the fact that they're all being done by one person basically is like, I mean, insane, especially for like the speed at which he was able to put, like, you know, some people would take years and years and years and years to put out like a 30 minute work of animation that they made. Whereas he's doing it like, I think at one point he was like putting out like one, like every year, basically.
It was literally at the point that I was like, I don't necessarily believe that he did this on his own.
Yeah. He has like, it's almost like a savant like quality to it. But if you remember as well, I guess I should establish also that like all three of these works are essentially Yuri Mecha, essentially. Mm. And I think his motivation was specifically, this is before Gundam Witch from Mercury was a thing, but he was like, I want to see more Yuri Mecha. There isn't enough of that in the world, so I'm going to make it myself. which is kind of based, honestly, kind of awesome. So yeah, he went and did the thing, and he has progressively grown an audience, grown a following, which has also been really cool to see as well. I mean, I'm not going to say that like the stuff that he puts out are like, I'm like super enamored with just like on their own. But in terms of like a creative voice that I think is like interesting to follow, he's definitely up there for me. Cause it, I think even has like a new thing coming out pretty soon as well. Like, you remember how like that third thing we watched, ended on like a massive cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm.
The second episode for that is coming out pretty soon. So
I'm looking forward to it. Cause like I liked Vapor Chill. Okay. But it was like, clearly, yeah, like it felt very clear, like a fan thing. Right. It was like, oh, yeah, this is pretty. Like, I think of like, Kushu Gonkin Atlantis.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is very cool. Very Gainax pilled, if you want to go check that out.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's a very, very fan animation feeling.
Right, right. Well, again, I think that's also part of the appeal. And I mean, I wonder if he's ever been like approached to like work on like something more professional, more big budget. Because he does, he almost has that kind of like Shinkai quality to him. This kind of like, I'm going to do everything myself kind of thing.
I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely someone to pay attention to, keep your eye out for. Cause I mean, you know, he said he wanted to see more Yuri Mecha in the world and God damn it, we're getting it.
We got Witch from Mercury. That is
got Witch from Mercury. This G-Quux thing coming out.
Oh yeah. G-Quux.
Man is eating good now.
Gainax fans and Yuri Mecha fans eating good.
But I think on YouTube I'll like try and like link to his stuff as well, because yeah, he is like just an interesting creative voice happening in the sort of quote unquote indie anime scene that is just I think his stuff is just like cool. It's cool to see someone doing stuff like that.
Oh, I was gonna say the second one I was like okay on. You could see a clear improvement in animation.
Oh yeah, well I think for context, the second one does not have English subtitles.
It at least it didn't at the time. Maybe it's changed. I don't know.
So we watched it without like really having a clear idea of what's going on. But even then, watching it's like, oh, this is like a clear improvement over Vapor Trail. And then visually, the third one that we watched was like even improvement, like especially in terms of like. Like the directing, like, because obviously, you know, being done by one person, like the animation is still going to be very limited, but you can really see that like he's gotten a lot better in terms of like shot composition, framing, use of colors, things like that.
Yeah, the third one was like the first one I was legitimately just like, this is actually just really fucking good. This is like it was gonna be hyped. I'm like, damn. I want to see this fucking lesbian vampire bitch get together with this fucking mecha bitch. This is fucking awesome.
Check out his stuff. Follow him on Twitter. I don't know. Maybe, kind of like Shinkai, one day he'll like to go on and be like the biggest anime director of all time or something.
Let's get on
the ground floor on Ashcoin, guys. All right. We're gonna take that shit to the moon.
I was gonna say it's like a fucking crypto scam. Get in while it gets good, boys.
Listen, all right. I mean, we were considering we might do like the next episode is like on like indie shorts, and it is funny to like when I'll look up indie anime shorts, graduation shorts on YouTube, I'll sort by like release date, so I'll just like see whatever's like, you know, like the most recent stuff to be put up on YouTube, and when I watch a lot of these things, they'll have like a few hundred views at most. Mm-hmm. And then it's funny to see like and come back and be like, oh, this thing now has like over 1 million views. Okay, yeah. Well, I got in early, and there's always, I think there's a really fun feeling to getting in early on something, if I'm gonna be honest. To be there before it was cool.
Because we're hipsters.
This is true.
So it's actually a problem. Speaking of problem, wasn't really sure what to put number one here. Kind of thought about the Chibi-Maru-chan movie. Probably. It feels weird. I don't know. It feels weird to talk about that, recommend that as like a obscure thing. I feel like
it is. It is like It's one of those things where, like, outside of Japan, Chibi Monaco is not exactly the biggest property, but, like, in Japan, that's, like, that's just what people watch.
Yeah. The first movie, though, fucking Keynote, you should check it out.
Hmm.
I guess I'll talk about Moi Bridge no Ito, Moi Bridge's Strings, the short by Koji Yamamura.
Hmm.
You may recognize him. He did the film Dozens of Norse.
Yep.
Did a lot of just shorts here and there, such as like Atamayama, Mount Head, or whatever.
I was gonna say, as soon as you said Koji Yamamura, I'm like, say no more.
Say no more.
I already know what this is gonna be like.
Yeah, he's done some really interesting shorts. He's produced a lot of interesting stuff.
He is like the guy when it comes to art house animation in Japan, basically, because he's a professor, isn't he?
I believe so.
He has like he does a lot of producer work on other people's like graduation shorts, especially stuff coming out of like Gaidai Animation.
Mm-hmm.
I think he works there. Let me double check real quick. I can't tell, so don't quote me on that. But he does produce a lot of those projects. So in that sense, he's very prolific.
Yeah. Oh, his birthday is a day after mine, and a number of decades later or earlier.
He produces like a lot of like really cool stuff. Like what was that? House of Loss, that Korean War thing that we watched.
Oh yeah, yeah. The
from 2022. He did something I still need. He produced another thing called A Bite of Bone that won a number of awards that I still need to watch. I don't think it's available online anywhere. But then when he pops out and does his own like animation work, it's like, holy fuck.
The Prey to Satie. People probably know him best for A Country Doctor. Frank Kafka is A Country Doctor.
Yeah, I think that's like most recognizable work. Didn't Demo talk about that one?
Demo?
Like that disturbing anime video he made?
I think so. Don't quote me on that, though. Moi Bridge's Strings, though, is probably my favorite that he's done.
Okay.
Because it's got very striking visuals, which he's known for. I think it encapsulates that style really well that he kind of is done in like a dozen Norse. I feel like a dozen Norse is probably like a bit more refined, but I don't think it has a striking of imagery for me. It's kind of like this love letter to Edward Moybridge. Is that what his name was? Off my head. Who obviously, if you know the whole picture of the horse running, like he set up the strings to take pictures and he basically made like the first animation of sorts.
So basically,
the horse was running and the strings got like tripped, and like as they got tripped they were taking pictures, and it like you put it together in sequence and then it made the horse run. So he's kind of like the first animation. Wanted to clarify, I figured that was like something people would.
That's sort of like the spinning wheel thing that gives like the illusion of motion.
Was that zoetrope?
Zoetrope, I think that's what it's called. Yeah.
Sort of. Yeah, it's sort of like that. So it's basically taking that as a concept and then kind of exploring animation from like a existential, like how to put it, it's just very like cerebral in like a visceral sense. Like you're just kind of sitting there absorbing this imagery of like, you know, kind of this imagery of just going through time, our relationship with time, strings sort of like bonding and binding us together, being used to capture a moment. It's very surreal in that
kind of like Shishin Khan almost.
Yes, yeah, kind of. Well, that's much more straightforward, I would say. This is this is very just like it's
kind of
it's inundating you with all this like imagery, and you just kind of have to like feel what the images are kind of making you kind of think about as far as like your relationship with time and these things. There is a narrative there. I wouldn't say it's very important. Cause it's just kind of like, it's not the focus. It's just kind of the driving factor of these images. Yep. The images go very hard, by the way. You know, like on the poster of Dozens of Norse, like you got the girl with like the dress, with the weird head looking thing in the cloud.
It's almost like the cover art for In the Airplane Over the Sea.
Yeah. I was going to say the shot that I really love, like, from
really
this.
Creepy.
Yeah. It almost is kind of like In the Airplane Over the Sea, in the sense of like, it's like a woman coming out of the ocean. And like her head is like just a clock, and it literally just kind of looks like it would be another like album cover of that. fun fact. Apparently, if you type in Moebius no Ito into Google Images, my video on it will come up at some point on the first page. But yeah, it's something that's like really stuck with me, and it's like so fucking like it's animated on watercolors. Like you like watch like the behind the scenes and the making of, and he's literally just got like the sheets that he like was watercoloring, and you can really tell because like it's not, you know how like a lot of like Girls Who Failed to Become Witches or some whatever this last year, how it had like that watercolor style.
Yeah
But you're watching it and like the watercolor backgrounds are not moving, right? Because it's not like it was actually watercolored page by page. This is very like, you could tell this was watercolor because like it's kind of consistent in like how he's using the colors, but obviously the brush strokes differ from frame to frame because it is a different picture that he actually watercolored. And it's not super profound. Like, I feel like if I sit there and try to overstate it, someone's going to be like, oh, this sounds like this is the most deep thing ever or whatever. And I don't necessarily give that impression. But it is very thought provoking, like very interesting in the sense of the visceral sense.
Mm-hmm.
But I would highly, it's probably one of my favorite shorts.
Like Yamamura's other work that I've seen, it is something that's like kind of need to think about it in order to get anything out of it. Otherwise, it is just going to come across as like nonsense. Basically, you really have to at least meet the movie halfway.
Yeah,
not gonna spoon feed stuff to you.
I would say like it's very similar to Dozens of Norse, except I feel like it's better because it is like condensed down and kind of more succinct in what it's trying to say.
Dozens of Norse is like a series of like different vignettes and that are like each kind of inscrutable on their own, and they come together to make a broader point. But it's also like, okay, I really gotta think about this one.
Very similar with this too, like that's how this is, except it's only 11 minutes. But yeah, it very highly recommended. It is fucking great. I fucking love it's I would say it's in my top 4 or 5 like shorts. So it is up there. That is a list of shorts that has the Japanese boy who draws on it too. So it's not it's not slacking.
Well, for my number 5 and the last thing we're going to talk about, I'm going to go the complete opposite direction. I'm going to talk about something that is bad or not really good, but is nonetheless interesting. But it's interesting in the context of what this individual would later go on to make. I'm, of course, talking about Alice in Cyberland.
Oh, Okay.
So Alice in Cyberland, for anyone who doesn't know, is this two episode OVA. For the longest time, the second episode was basically considered lost. Written by Chiaki Kanaka, a couple years before Serial Experiments Lane. And it kind of reads as like a blueprint for what Lane would go on to do. Like a lot of like the ideas that like Lane was working with in terms of like, you know, the internet and like cyber terrorism, these concepts of like, you know, Alice in Wonderland and sort of like, you know, being literally physically subsumed into the internet. All that kind of like starts with Alice in Cyberland. Alice in Cyberland was also like a media mix project. Like there was like a video game and stuff as well, much like Serial Experiments Lane.
To be fair, I think Alice in Cyberland was like what console was that? It was a Sega console. I think it was a Saturn game first and was adapted into an anime for the game, whereas Lane was a anime first, right?
I don't know. I think like with a lot of these projects, they're kind of, those things are kind of just developed concurrently to one another. But you know, it's I honestly don't know. It's a chicken and the egg. They're both like, you know, on the same level, I'd say. You know, the Serial Experiments Lane is both a video game and an anime in my mind.
Well, that's also because you have the vivid imagery of Lane putting a gun in her mouth from the game.
I have trolled so many people with that. And people are like, does that actually happen in Serial Experiments Lane? I'm like, yeah, technically.
Yeah.
It's not the anime. They're like, what the fuck are you talking about? And like, just watch it. You'll figure it out.
Metaphorically.
Metaphorically. But unlike Serial Experiments Lane, Alice in Wonderland, Alice in Cyberland is not weird. It's like a fucking magical girl project, essentially. It's okay. It's all right. You watch that first episode and you're like, this was a thing. Then you watch the second episode and you wonder what the fuck happened.
What was Brud cooking?
It's something that I think any diehard fan of Serial Experiments Lane should definitely at least check out Alice in Cyberland, because it is interesting to see, you know, that, you know, Kanaka was already kind of like working with a lot of these ideas before Lane, and to see them kind of manifested in a bit of a different way. Even if that different way is not necessarily that good. It is interesting that the second episode, it was never released on home video because the sales for the first episode were so poor. Just kind of like sad, honestly. Like, I do feel like it even if I don't necessarily like something that much, it does kind of like suck to see like a project fail. Oh, that sucks, but it is what it is. But we eventually, only a few years ago, very, very recently, did like TV rip, I think, of the second episode surfaced online. And oh boy, is the second episode rough.
I didn't know it was on TV.
Yeah. I think it aired like once. It's like, I think it was like the second episode was almost entirely handled in South Korea, and it does not look good. Like the first episode is like already like, this looks all right, I guess. The second episode is really rough. It's not even necessarily like charming, or anything like that. It is just very like, this is a thing that exists, but in the broader context in which this thing exists, I think it's interesting. And again, worth checking out if you're like a big fan of Serial Experiments Lane.
Very, very like relevant historically, just not very good.
Yes. Unfortunately, I don't even necessarily really want to hate on it because I don't think it's like terrible. It didn't annoy me. I just kind of watched it. And I'm just like, it was fine. No, it's like, whatever. It doesn't. I don't hate the fact that it exists. Like, I'm looking at the Annie List page right now, and like the second review, the tagline is "This exists and it probably shouldn't." And it's like, I wouldn't say it's that bad. All right, it's not offensive. It's just kind of like, it's just a thing.
Well, I look at the My Anime List page, and the top review is recommended. Second review is
Hey, we're recommending it too, even though it's like a recommendation with a few asterisk marks, because it is something interesting to watch. And again, it's pretty short, so it's like, yeah, what do you have to lose?
Also, apparently, it's a PS1 game.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, not a Sega Saturn.
Not a Sega game.
Get baited.
Get baited. Can't believe we're spreading misinformation online. But
all you Sega Saturn fans or Alice in Cyberland PS1 game fans that are like, actually it was on the PS1, you get baited.
But I don't know. Yeah, Alice in Cyberland, it's an anime forever.
Okay. No, actually it wasn't okay. I thought it was kind of bad.
Oh yeah, you liked it considerably less. I think I'm more forgiving towards its flaws.
I was just like, what the fuck is this horse shit? Whatever. Now Alice in Dreamland, though, that kind of
that's worse.
What are you talking about?
Alice in Dreamland was just hard for me. I was getting annoyed watching that one. Alice in Cyberland, you know, it's like, all right, this is, yeah, I can get behind this. The girls are cute. Alice in Dreamland, it was like, I'm bored and I want to turn this off. Do something
else. Alice in Wonderland is not batting very well in anime, is she?
Someone should do a video on all the, like, Alice in Wonderland anime.
Alice in Cyberland, Alice in Dreamland, Alice in Soapland.
I think Malice Doll counts. There's also a character named Alice in Serial Experiments Lane. Yeah. So there's like that connection, like Alice down the rabbit hole kind of. I don't know what Kanaka was cooking, but he was cooking. He was in the kitchen. There's smoke and fire everywhere, but god damn it, he's gonna make you something delicious eventually.
I tried to ask him on Twitter. I was like, bro, what were you cooking with Alice Malice Doll?
And then he started ranting to us about how.
That is a great way to end the podcast. It's on a long ass censor. What a time to be alive.